Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 37. Eric's got a case of the giggles.
I think we both have a case of the sillies, is what it is.
Well, we always have a case of the sillies.
Yeah, this is worse. We can't even get through the introduction.
Well, that's... Yeah, Handsomeites. There you go.
There we go.
Yeah, woo!
Yes, that's right.
Rick flared up in here. Woo!
Woo!
There you go. That's how you gotta do it. Then you gotta chop somebody in the chest.
You do.
You got an open-hand chop.
In a way that would absolutely hurt no one.
I don't... Depends on how if he wants you to feel it or not.
Yeah, I know. If you just want it to be loud and hurt no one, that's what you want to do.
Yeah, or unless you want to raise welts on someone's chest, which they do that sometimes.
He might want to. He is probably a huge dick. Or actually, he is a huge dick.
What? Ric Flair?
Yeah.
I've heard that he's, like, too nice most of the time.
That is, I don't know, that's not really been my experience of him from the people I know that have met him. I'm sure he's, like... I don't know. He just seems like an overbearing asshole. But as far as, you know, incredibly famous people go, or at least incredibly famous within the spheres that he's in, you know,
mm-hmm.
there are probably much worse people. Than the Nate.
I've read stories online about like people have met him, and mm-hmm. they're like the stories about him like not having like he just throws money away. Mm-hmm. That's their experience. Is like they'll go hey, and they'll just you know say hi, and he'll buy drinks for everybody, or tip. I've heard a story on Reddit from a waiter or a waitress or something, and he tipped them $500.
That's actually very good.
But I mean, like
it really sucks when like wealthy famous people are really dicks about tipping.
I mean, that's the thing. Like he's in debt, and he's made. Like millions and millions and millions of dollars over his career for 20 years in the South, maybe other, aside from Jerry Lawler, he was the most recognizable wrestler
mm-hmm.
in the entire South. And mm-hmm. now he's in debt and he has like four ex-wives. He has to pay them all money. You know, he's working for the WWE again. So that's good.
I mean, who else is he going to work for? He's not going to work for H&R Block.
He worked for TNA Impact Wrestling for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He actually wrestled for them, which he should not have been. It was just sad. Like, I don't need to see, like, a 60-plus-year-old Ric Flair bleeding all over the place. Like,
that's kind of his shtick, isn't it? Just bleeding?
Back in the day, everyone bled all the time.
Uh-huh.
But now, I mean, he was always...
I just remember seeing him in a zillion matches over the 90s and just like, so, let me just fall and... Now my head has exploded and my hair is red.
Yeah, exactly. That was, I mean, in a match, yes, that's when he was, I mean, he's played the heel for most of his career, so.
This is a lot of self-indulgent wrestling talk,
well,
isn't it?
I was also going to say that his daughter is now wrestling as well.
Well, I hope she can hoot with the best of them.
She's a former fitness model and gymnast, so she's like athletic.
That seems plausible.
Yeah. You know what her name is in the WWE?
Chick Flair?
No, Charlotte.
Just Charlotte?
Charlotte. Yeah, divas usually only get one name. She's Charlotte, you know, as in North Carolina. So
That's good.
Yeah. I think there's enough dicking around again.
Like I said, I think it's a lot of wrestling talk.
Well, the Royal Rumble is tonight, so...
It is tonight.
Ric Flair will not be in the Royal Rumble, thankfully.
Wow.
Jake the Snake Roberts might be.
Really?
Yeah, he came back like 3 weeks ago for like they had a classic Raw, the Raw, you know, they bring back a lot of the old legends. Jake Snake came out. He's been working with DDP. Like, he's had a whole bunch of substance abuse problems for a decade now. And he's living with DDP. They do DDP's yoga program.
I was going to say the yoga cured him.
Yep. Him and Scott Hall are doing that. Keeping him.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Jake Snake came back, looked pretty good. He's been, he had surgery on his shoulder. They Indiegogo'd his shoulder surgery.
Wow.
And they did that for Scott Hall's hip surgery too, and it worked. They met their goal and went way past it.
But what do they do with the extra money? They're like,
other medical problems he has. The shoulder was the worst, but he has, you know, he's an old wrestler, so he has tons of medical issues.
Stretch goals. We'll put a robot arm on you, Jake the Snake.
But hopefully he'll be a surprise entrant. He's been lobbying for it, and that, I don't know, that even may be to his detriment because they like to surprise people with him, but it'd be still cool to see him come out at least.
I had at least 10 more jokes about Jake the Snake getting surgery.
Well, keep him in your back pocket. You never know when...
I don't think I can do that. I'd have to squirm around too much.
Yeah. I think we can go to checking in.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea.
That sounds like a good idea.
Max Cap for Jake the Snake talk, I think. Hope you're enjoying that, Handsome Mites. Let us know if you want more Jake the Snake.
Let us know if you want us to shut the fuck up about wrestling. I only do it to make Robbie happy so he won't beat me.
I accept
he'll
that.
He only beats me at Borderlands, though.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that's true.
Eh.
Eric, what are you checking in with?
I just experienced the Gasparilla.
You went?
Yeah, I went to Gasparilla. For those that aren't from the general Central Florida area, there is a yearly festival and parade honoring, what's his name, Jose Gaspar?
I don't know.
Well, I think that's his name. And he was a pirate, and it is a pirate themed parade, and apparently the way you celebrate is by getting drunk in the street and feeling someone up.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was about.
So I actually didn't do either of those things. I just sort of rode my bike around and looked beautiful and went home. So that was my Gasparilla experience.
You didn't get drunk in the street?
No.
No vomiting, no urinating? No.
I did urinate, but you know, it was not involuntary.
Oh, okay. Because I lived in Tampa for quite a while. I never went to Gasparilla.
Well, this is the second time I've been. It was much like the first. There are some really gorgeous women that live in Tampa, and I don't think I would even want to share a conversation with half of them.
Yeah, that's pretty much why I never went to Gasparilla.
Yes, yes. Anyway, that was Gasparilla. I, after that, went home. So Robin, why don't you tell me about what you've been doing? Why don't you check in?
What the hell? That's the stupidest. Okay, I haven't done much this week.
I'm pretty sure that's a voice from He-Man that I'm emulating. I'm not sure about that.
I haven't watched He-Man in a long time.
Well, I mean, why would you? You're an adult.
There's adults.
This is coming from someone who probably owns a He-Man box set somewhere.
I haven't watched. There's adults who watch He-Man. I have not watched.
There
He-Man.
Are. I nothing against them.
But I don't have a whole bunch to check with. I just want to touch base with a game, board game, Eric's favorite kind of game. It's actually, I don't even know if the Kickstarter is, it's a kick, the guy who, the designer of the game, he's designed other games, and my friend Nick down here, he has his own YouTube channel, he reviews a whole bunch of board games, and the designer sent him this game to do a video for the Kickstarter. It's basically a prototype of the game, and the game is called Heroes Wanted, and it's actually like a superhero board game. And I played it this week, and I'm fairly certain to Kickstarter it. The gameplay is kind of what you'd expect, but you basically are like, every time you play, you're making up a new hero. Like, you, there's two halves to the heroes. There's A cards and there's B cards. And you get a handful of A cards, a handful of B cards, and you pick the combination you want. And the combinations turn into something like God Hates Astronaut Heroes. In the game I played, I had a guy who was called Dino Beard. And it basically looked like Rasputin with a dinosaur body. And he had, his powers were all beard powers.
I mean, like most of us have.
Like most of us have. But, and then you get him, you get his powers, everyone designs one. Someone was Nitro Hawk, someone was Giant Giraffe, and then one of someone was the Mysterious Dude. It's playing on a lot of obvious superhero tropes, but then a lot of just weird, random crap. And it's a lot of fun just doing that, and then you basically are, like, going around the city fighting a villain. The starter villain is a guy who litters a lot. So you get points for beating him up and picking up his litter and putting it in proper trash receptacles.
Well, that sounds wacky.
It is. It was fun.
So are you going to kick in some money?
I'm going to. I'll Kickstarter it, absolutely, as soon as it's
launched. Are you going to link us to the Kickstarter?
I'm going to if it's active. I'm not even sure if it's active yet. As soon as it is, I will put it up.
Okay.
But that's all I got, I think, for checking in.
All right.
Woohoo!
You ready? I'd say that we're sufficiently checked in. Don't you think, Robbie?
Yeah, I do think that.
I think this voice works a little bit better when I hold my nose.
I think you should not do that.
I can't believe how disturbed you are.
Just makes me unsettled. It's time for weekly floppies.
How about some floppy stuff?
Yeah, floppies. We're going to start off this week with DC. And we're going to do Harley Quinn number 2. We read Harley Quinn number 1, and we were like, we kind of liked it. So we're going to try to see if this...
It didn't make me want to kill myself. I'll go that far.
Yeah, kind of.
We both recommended it. But I think my exact comment was, you already know if you want this.
That's very true.
And I think this book is much the same.
Yes. This is Harley Quinn number 2, written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. Artists are Chad Harden and Stefan Rue. Colorist Alex Sinclair. Letters John J. Hill. And yeah, like Eric said, it is, you probably already know if you like this or not.
Mm-hmm.
This issue sees Harley Quinn rescuing a whole bunch of, like, shelter animals that are going to be put to death, apparently. And Poison Ivy makes an appearance. And that's really it. There's more guys trying to kill her, and they get... Then all these rescue animals eat the person.
Mm-hmm.
Eat that guy. Cuddly animals eat a man.
There's jokes about lesbians, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, are they just dropping all the hints and stuff and just going, yep, they're lesbians. Or at least bisexual. Is that supposed to be implied here?
Well, it's... She says, would you like to meet my beaver? And she's like, woo. And then they're like laying in bed next to each other in their underwear. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's stupid and fan servicey. And this whole thing is a big fan wank. But I mean, tell me you didn't know that it was going to be going into it. I think we all knew that it was going to be going into it.
I mean, they've hinted at it over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the animated TV show, which is for kids, there still was, you know, subtext there. I didn't expect them just to go, we're dropping all the hints, and we're just gonna go full on bore.
I mean,
they sleep together.
Yeah, who cares either way.
I don't know. It fits in with the rest of this book where it's clearly like...
I know. This book is full on retard. And I enjoyed it. I just felt sort of dirty reading it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too, a little bit.
Do you remember the episode of The Sopranos where it talked about whatever sort of sociopath that Tony was, about how he... would just, like, straight up murder people, but, like, had this weird affinity for, like, small animals and babies and things. Do you remember them talking about that?
No, I do not.
It was some kind of disorder. It was Dr. Melfi that like found this and read this and realized that this is what Tony was.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what is that? That she's like, let me like murder a ton of people with no thought put towards it, and let me save a bunch of animals. I mean, there's some degree of like, oh, these are bad people. But it's, I don't know.
I don't know about that. She murders some guy who's just walking his dog a little aggressively in the first.
Yeah, I remember that. But I mean, like, I don't know. It's just kind of gross. She's like buying a freezer to chop people up and put them in. I mean, was I reading that wrong?
I think she just wanted I don't think that's what. I don't know.
I mean, she was talking to that person that has the museum of like killers, and she's looking at like a wax like display of a bunch of chopped up body parts in a Ted freezer, Bundy. And she's was that Ted Bundy? Okay,
I believe so. Yeah.
Fair enough. You know your serial killers.
I think it's Ted Bundy, or it's him or Dahmer. I get them mixed up.
She's like, I gotta pick up a fridge from my place, or you know, big or small, big. I've got the room for it. I'm gonna need a walk-in meat locker. I don't know what the deal is. If that's supposed to be like, oh, I'm gonna murder a bunch of people, or if I don't know, it's weird. There's a lot of weird shit in this.
Yeah, to make the record straight, it was Dahmer.
Okay,
but yeah, it's I don't think I will be reading this anymore after this issue, because this is exactly what I expected, and it's just nothing that I want. I mean, like, I think, like you said, you already know if you want this or not. Mm-hmm. And I was just saying, you know, maybe they'll see we'll see how it goes the second issue. And it's not that it's bad, it's just dumb and weird.
It's not for me necessarily. There are things I like about it. The art is really beautiful. I like the way these characters are handled. I wasn't overly impressed with the first issue, but I think this is kind of a big step up. It wouldn't sell it to me, you know.
No,
it's got some nice fan servicey artwork, pretty girls in it, and shit like that, stuff that I like. But it's clearly not for me.
No, and I like my thoughts. I'm like, this is like trying to be Deadpool in DC.
I don't know,
zany murders.
Yeah, and I
except with
there's room for that. I think. I mean. Do you have a problem with Deadpool?
Sometimes.
I can see that, but I mean, my only exposure to him is in the books that, like, you and I have read together.
Yeah, that's Uncanny X-Force.
X-Force, yeah.
It's
not a Deadpool book.
That's the best version of Deadpool I've ever read.
Yes.
Everything else is middling to really, really poor.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what to say about this. I guess I'm a buy. It's not bad. It's quite good for what it is.
Yeah, I would say don't buy, but you already know. People know whether they want it or not. If you just want a book that you're not going to think deeply on, then buy it. If you just want to like look at a stupid story about puppies and kittens and women in their underwear beating the shit out of people, I mean, you could do worse.
You say all those things, and it makes me think, I really should like this book a lot more, but...
Well executed and stupid as fuck.
Yeah. So, buy-ish? Don't buy?
I'm a don't buy.
Okay, honestly. I think that makes it even. One of us is a buy, and one of us is a do not buy. I think that's
good. I do genuinely love the artists that work on this, though. It is a glorious looking book.
We're going to move on to Animal Man. Number 27, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Raphael Albuquerque, colors by John Callis, and letters by Jerry K. Pletcher. Buddy has returned from, like, outer space, and is doing battle with the last remaining...
Well, they're called totems, aren't they?
Totems, okay, that's... Okay, last remaining totem of the Red. After he's killed all the others. Then we got all the pirate animals trying to protect his daughter. Along with their cat. I liked it.
I did too. There's like big events that were sort of you expected to happen for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But not a whole lot really happens in this, in my opinion. It's a lot of action, which is
fun.
Yeah,
I know. It's a lot of action.
It's fun. I mean, I don't know. The Animal Man is good, and this is following suit. It's Albuquerque didn't do the last issue, did he? He did this one. This is really nice, really strong work. I don't like the way he draws the mother, but the way he draws the daughter, I really enjoy.
Yeah, he didn't do the last one. He does a good job. Yeah,
yeah.
And it is mostly action. You do get a kind of you do figure out that yes, Buddy Baker can now like transform differently because of his experience.
He's got Super Saiyan Animal Man powers.
Yeah, exactly. But this is the last arc of this before Animal Man goes bye-bye forever. So, or before he goes to Justice League Canada.
He's going to be drinking maple syrup.
Yep. It'll still be written by Jeff Lemire, so hopefully it'll still be...
It'll be interesting.
It'll still be true to his character, I assume.
It just seems... I don't know. It's weird. I'm really wondering how this is going to all pan out. This totem has no idea that all this other stuff even exists.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Everyone in the red just seems completely ignorant of it. That point kind of fascinates me.
Yeah. I'm sure that that's probably going to be a storyline going forward, you know, with Buddy Baker.
Seems likely.
That connection with the Bridgewalker.
Yeah. How many more books are in this arc?
Two, I think.
Two?
Yeah.
Okay.
One in February, one in March, and then done.
Okay. This one, I think everything that happened in this could have been told in a lot less pages, but it's, I don't know. It's more great Animal Man stuff.
Yeah.
I just kind of wish more happened and not just what did. I'm not really feeling a lot of emotional resonance for what's happening to his daughter.
Well, I think I don't either, because I'm expecting something to happen. Like, she's going to display some kind of power.
Yeah, or Buddy's just going to swoop in and save her. Like, there's no tension surrounding that at all.
Well, I think I'm just anticipating that. I think that is the thing. Like, even at the end, I'm like, okay, well, this is obviously leading into them being triumphant in some way, but maybe they'll play on that expectation differently than we expect.
It's hard to say.
Because, I mean, if the title is ending, there's really no...
Right.
There's no reason to keep anything, any status quo the way it is. So, we'll see. I'm still a buy, regardless of all the criticisms.
Oh, yeah, these are not criticisms that make it not worth buying. It is a beautiful book, and the story is really fun, and I would continue to read it if they continue to put it out. But
yeah, I need to go back.
Close up shop.
I need to get the early trades of this.
Seems like a good idea.
I'm probably going to do that eventually. But that was Animal Man 27. That's double buy.
Double buy.
We're going to go to Indie Book of the Week. Yeah. Pretty Deadly, number 4. Written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. Art and cover by Emma Rios. Colors by Jordi Belair. And letters by Clayton Cowles. I think this is the best issue since, like, the first one. What do you think, Eric?
I think it shows more things happening, so it would be hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, it certainly ups the pace.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things move a lot faster in this book than they have in the 2 and 3. 2 and 3 is kind of, I guess, setting the stage for this.
Like, it was so jarring to see this one dude with his clothes on that I didn't even know who the hell he was. It's like, oh, like, if this guy had his dick flopping around, I'd be like, yeah, that's that guy.
I don't think it'd be appropriate with that little girl.
Well,
just hanging out.
You know, I'm not going to make any pederast jokes. That's not appropriate for this podcast.
You do get to see, like, that one of the deaths, Big Alice, she's naked for some reason.
It's more fun if women are naked.
We do get a little bit more insight into Death's relationship with Ginny's mother.
This is even, like, a book drawn by women, too.
Yeah.
Drawn and written by women, and they're just like, put a naked girl in there. Why the hell not?
I found the fight scene between Ginny and...
You mean the beatdown scene?
Yeah, basically. But, I don't know, from what I've read, there's some of that is the fact that he doesn't want to hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's subtext there that he's holding back because he doesn't want to hurt her.
That is a little bit how I was reading it, that he's not, like, really fighting back hard enough or, you know,
he's just trying reason. He's trying to defend himself but not hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's taking his lumps because maybe he feels he deserves it. He is that kind of character where he's, you know, eternally punishing himself for his sins. But it's really set him the big, I mean, at the end, everyone, all the big players are all in one space.
Yeah, it's like almost jarring because I don't know. It felt like a lot of static sort of, it's been several issues of expository material, and then all of a sudden all the characters are together. And it's a weird way to tell the story. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, there were things that happened in the past couple issues that I don't know. It's leading to that. I think having the little girl and Fox and Ginny together makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of coming together. She was chasing them. But the Johnny Coyote, I don't know why he's... I don't know where he came in. I guess it's the crow thing.
He teleported.
It's the crow. I don't know what the relationship that crow has with the story, but I guess we'll find out.
It does. But, I mean, it seems a little disjointed.
I'm glad it got to this point.
I think that it could have stood to have started closer to this point. It almost feels like the other two issues were kind of inserted to me. But I mean, I'm more critical of this than you are.
No, I like the journey. I don't mind the exposition. But the art is still really, really good.
It is
so.
It is some of the best in this. I mean, the whole series is very strong in the art department, and this is some of the best that they've shown yet. It is glorious.
Yeah, it's really good. The fight scenes between Fox and Ginny are so expressive and
they're very fluid. Energetic, and this Emma Rios has clearly read a lot of manga herself because this has a lot of we've already discussed that it has a lot of European influence on it. You know, what with I think I might say Mobius in every episode.
Well, he was a hugely influential
artist, absolutely. So. I mean, more so than almost anyone.
Yeah, but, so it's not this, like... This I'm is, sure this most is, artists are influenced by him, so it's not wrong.
Well, this has a nice balance of that sort of drawing and mark-making with, you know, very, like, manga-influenced fight scenes and lines and whatnot. It's... And just sort of drawing in general. It's a really handsome-looking book.
Yeah. It's... Beautiful. A lot of time in fight scenes between two characters, and this is like a down and dirty, you know, brawl with people like ripping out chunks of each other and throwing mud in their face and all kinds of stuff. And a lot of times when people try and do this, you're not sure what's happening. Mm-hmm. They try and be gritty by getting everything close, and then you're not sure what the hell is going on. Mm-hmm. In this, it's very clear. Each action, and I think that also just has something to do with the character design. It's quite easy to tell them apart.
Yeah, and that's an important thing, that they've been smart enough that all the characters are really recognizable from one another.
Yeah,
which is not always an obvious thing to do when you're launching a new series. It's clear that they've really thought things through.
Yeah. So I am certainly a buy on this. I'm loving this series.
Did you see the bonus pinup by Brandon Graham?
I was going to mention it too. Yeah,
yep.
It's really good.
He's not surprisingly likes this book.
Yeah, I saw it on I think a Pretty Deadly Tumblr. I saw this the right before they released it. I was like, oh, that's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never even looked at the back cover before.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah,
But I like that they illustrate the front and the back. They've done that for all of them.
Well, this is another one of those series where they're like, it's like Saga, where they want one artist doing all the issues.
It would not make sense for anyone but Emma Rios to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep knocking it out of the park, ladies.
Great issue.
Double buy.
We're going to go over to Marvel. We're going to start off with a new book from Marvel. All New Invaders, number one. Written by James Robinson, with art by Steve Pugh. I think that's how you pronounce his name.
I think it's Pugga.
Pugga? Pugga? With colors by Guru FX, letters by Corey Pettit. And Tim Long is credited as a designer. Not sure precisely what that means, but...
Well, there's...
There you go.
There's some design in this book, like if you look at the title splash page.
Ah, yeah, I see it. Okay, I understand. He's, yeah, probably doing that.
He might have also... I mean, is there a separate letterer? I missed that.
Yeah, Corey Pettit.
Okay.
But this is James Robinson, most famously of Starman, and recently split with DC with a lot of acrimony, because they were screwing around with his book there. So, DC's loss. Now, Marvel's gain. This is, we're seeing the Invaders, you know, the World War II superhero group. The, Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, Namor, Bucky, who's now Winter Soldier, obviously, and Cap. This is being brought together to fight off aliens, I suppose. Some kind of Kree group is trying to acquire some kind of artifacts. It's very vague what they are.
Yeah.
By design. Most of this book focuses on the original Human Torch and his life, where he's at, basically. Which is basically hiding out in a small town, trying to be just a normal person.
My life as a robot.
Yeah, he's trying to, you know, not call attention to himself. He works as a mechanic, which, you know, makes sense. But then the Kree come looking for him and force him out of his cover, basically. We get a flashback scene in World War II a little bit. And then kind of a big action scene at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I like this, but there's not a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm not blown away. There's some really nice figure drawing, but it looks like it's trying to be a movie, and I kind of like it when comic books are comic books. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand.
It's like so photorealistic, and it's so obviously playing off the success of all the Marvel movies. It's good. It's fun. I kind of don't care.
Okay. I mean, it's not bad.
It is not bad.
It's just, it's only 19 pages. I don't know if you caught that.
That is weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Three or four more pages. I don't know if it doesn't count. Does that? I don't think there's any double page. I think there's a couple double pages, so that might count one page.
I think it does. That's what it is.
So, yeah.
There are four double pages, right, five, in a row. Six double pages.
Yeah, right in a row. So that makes sense. That's why there's the discretion.
Yes.
But it still feels like it needs more of a cliffhanger, mm-hmm. I guess, to intrigue you. Like, another page or two of... I mean, I don't understand... It doesn't deliver enough of like impact. Like, why should I keep reading?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my biggest.
As if we didn't know that like Captain America or somebody was going to swoop in and save the fucking day.
Yeah.
The second something started happening.
With Winter Soldier.
Yes.
Together.
Yes. With an explosion behind him, and they don't turn around and look at it, and they look totally badass.
They do. Totally.
That's what you do, is there's an explosion behind you. You don't turn around and look at it. You just keep walking.
Keep walking.
You look like a badass.
Yep, like a badass. And yeah, you've already talked about the art. I don't mind it. It's just... my more concern is that there's a lot of action in here between, you know, the Human Torch fighting this Kree warrior. This, I think she's an accuser, because she has the hammer.
She says what she is.
Does she?
She's like, I am Hoo-Ha, the Blobbity Blue. But I don't know where that is.
Moham the Blobbity Blue?
Mm-hmm.
Tainoth the Pursuer.
Yes.
So she's a pursuer, whatever that means.
Yes.
I just think the fight, it could use more I really enjoyed that flashback scene.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that because it was he's experienced this memory that he doesn't remember, and there's like these people here that he doesn't remember. These like, you know, all these like the Major Liberty,
mm-hmm.
you know, an old Golden Age superhero that's forgotten, but like he doesn't remember him being there, and like all this stuff's happening. That's really interesting to me, like that. But they don't explain any of it. They don't get to any. That doesn't. The emphasis is on the action, which isn't as interesting to me.
Yes, it's a pretty generic action sequence.
You know, him trying to save the people of this town.
I really like her for some odd reason. I think her costume, her design is really awesome.
Yeah, she's like in a semi Ronin the Accuser getup.
Mm-hmm, exactly. She's gonna smack people with a hammer.
It feels like this fight is just grandstanding anywhere. I don't understand why. I don't know why don't they just get to brass tacks and like we get some. That's the thing. I want to give this another book, another issue maybe. Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with you. I mean it's there's nothing like so terrible that I'm like blech. Let's never read this, and it might warrant looking into it further, but honestly, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
No, I'd say
just because it's not like, oh, this is an amazing book.
No, I'm kind of meh on it, but I'm gonna give it. We'll give it another shot and see if it goes anywhere. But until then, do not buy.
Yeah, probably don't buy.
Double don't buy.
Till you get a little bit more information about it, maybe a trade or something if it's better.
Yeah, I mean, a whole arc of this story might be fun, but
yeah,
as it stands. No, thank you.
Yeah. Finally, in Marvel, we are getting Black Widow number 2. Really, that is fast. They are releasing these fast because I guess they got them. You know, they got a couple in the bank, so they're gonna
must. Yeah,
they're gonna bring them out. It says in issue 3 is gonna come out pretty quickly too, and after that, it will go back to monthly.
It's only like what 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. So this is seeing Black Widow go on this job that is actually has connections to, you know, something in her past.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a little bit more info on her manager and of like this major villain that's, you know, trying to thwart this job. This, I think, is to me, this is substantially better than the first issue.
Yes, it's great. It was a lot of fun. And I think Phil Noto he's doing a good job here. He's making it look like a design decision that the empty panels are empty and the other panels are full.
Yeah.
It's not just, I am lazy and I don't want to draw anymore.
And it's, and this book is like basically an espionage book in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And is adding you're getting a lot of layers thrown in just on this issue about, you know, there's this fair figure from her past that she like is trying to hunt her down. You get some interesting depth in her manager or her whatever you want to call him.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who arranges, you're like, you see that he's not all that he appears to
be.
Don't
they say handler?
Handler. Yeah, that's a good word for it. Her handler. You get, you know, info on him. And I really like the narration in this about, you know, all these mistakes. She's like, this is my first mistake. This is my second mistake. It's really, really, really good. A lot better than the first issue. First issue was fine, but this is
A good step up.
Yeah.
Did you go ball when she wouldn't let the cat in?
A little bit.
That doesn't surprise me.
But it does show you that she's let it in before.
Yes.
So there you go. I like that touch. The first issue I went, yeah, maybe I'll like this, maybe I won't. This issue I'm like, I'm gonna be reading this.
No, this book is a lot of fun. It absolutely is. It's just a cool story, and it's something that you don't see a lot of in superhero comics. And I don't know. She is an interesting and very different character, and it's good that they're letting that uniqueness be what's good about the story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
They're not just sort of making it all about Captain America and Thor, you know, that you can have
the Black Widow story, yeah, exactly. And Black Widow's in it. That's
exactly. It's nice that you can focus on the things that make her unique and this, I mean, we already discussed, it's the same way that Hawkeye is.
Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they be unique, just like Hawkeye.
Yes. Well, and if they can do it like this, yeah. This is another potential diamond here. This is how you do that. This is how you be unique, just like something else.
Exactly. And there's issue 3 is in another 2 weeks. And after that, it'll be a monthly thing. But they probably have some in the bank. They want to make sure they want to get people hooked. This is the way you do it. Putting out really good issues.
Yeah. Is Noto supposed to be off of it after the third one?
Arc?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Hmm. I mean, I haven't seen any. I don't think I've seen the solicits past the first arc. I imagine they'll do at least one arc with him and then maybe switch it over to another artist. But
it seems like that would be another thing that they could do, is just give him consistent work on this book. I mean, I could see it having this look for, you know, most of the next couple of years it runs.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. Like, if you want him to be on this book, it's hard to go, you know, back and forth. If they, like, give him an arc and then let him, you know, give him an arc off, basically, so he can do the next one. But, you know, anything in between that's not him, it'd be hard to say, you know, to go back and forth between the two. The styles certainly would not mesh. I mean, he's pretty distinctive in comic books, especially his style. Because Hawkeye, that's the thing. Even with different artists, if David Aja wasn't doing everything, even the other guys who've been filling in have similar styles to him.
Yes,
like Steve Lieber, Annie Wu, both those people, they both have similar styles. I don't know how they'd fill in for Phil Noto and then make it be consistent.
I don't really feel like it would be that difficult. There are a lot of digital painters that can do stuff similar to this.
Really?
I mean, I'm not trying to say that Phil Noto doesn't have talent, but there will be someone that's not as big a name that can fill in for him when he needs to take a nap. Okay.
Yeah. Or they could just say, well, he's done an arc, and now we're going to move on to another artist, and then just have every arc be a different artist.
Maybe so, you know, which would be acceptable as well, but it'll really change the feel of it.
Yeah, I mean, Marvel's never shy about putting different artists on books to make sure it gets out on time. Do that all the time. But the Black Widow number 2, bye.
Totally really bye.
Good. Really good book.
Double bye.
And that is it for weekly floppies. I do want
to... I know, it's so weird to be done with floppies so quickly. I know,
we're now reading 6 books. I also want to mention a few other releases on the week that I read myself, that I at least merit attention. Deadly Class number 1, a new book from Rick Remender, set in the 80s, an orphan goes into a school for deadly assassins. The idea was kind of like, eh. Like, that seems like something I've read before. Actually, I know there was a book called that is that exact same premise to a certain extent. But it's done very, very well. Lots of, the art's really nice, and it delivers a lot of information inside, like, just a regular, you know, sized issue. Definitely check that out if you like Rick Remender or if the idea sounds interesting to you at all. All new X-Factor 2 came out this week as well. Same schedule as Black Widow, and we didn't have room for both. It's the same thing. The same feeling I had for Black Widow number 2. Like, it's substantially better than 1. X-Factor number 2 is substantially better than 1 as well. A lot of stuff happens. A lot of really cool action. Really good character stuff. Fun.
This is the book with Polaris and Gambit.
Yeah, Quicksilver, and they get a couple new characters in this one too.
I actually, the way you described it to me before we I think I might have to check it out as well, because I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite book.
It's the same.
If it's following the same upward trend that Black Widow is, I'll have to check it out.
It's a lot of stuff, a really, really clever, cool idea. Like Quicksilver, like, you know, I don't know, it's like a really nerdy thing in comic books when you see like the fastball special kind of thing where you see Colossus throw Wolverine, you know, and Iron Man blasting like a beam off of Captain America's shield. Like silly combo power things that make me nerd out. And one of those, there's a moment in this book. It's really fun.
That's the memorable.
And then you get a lot of really cool little character moments that are funny. Gambit is certainly the everyman in this book. That is definitely what he is.
Interesting.
And he is wearing a bomber jacket. You're correct.
I knew it.
And finally, Captain America. Like, we've read the last couple Captain Americas, they've been kind of meh.
Yeah.
This one's like, stuff happens and it's good again. Like,
is Nuke back? I hope he's back.
He's in it, but he's actually interesting.
I actually didn't want Nuke to be back, but yeah, he is in it.
He's in it, but it's interesting. It's not as nearly as bad. His portrayal is not. He's not just, you know, blah, 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 left guys behind.
Our boys.
You get the reveal of this guy's been, like, in the background since the Marvel Now relaunch. Dr. Mindbubble.
Uh-huh.
He's an LSD super soldier.
Magnificent.
He was a scientist who was operating at the same time in like the 50s and 60s trying to get a super soldier serum based on LSD. And then they dismantled his project, so he injected himself. So he's like...
Sweet.
And you get a lot of Iron Nail stuff in this, which is the best part, honestly. The Iron Nail is he's a great character. It's really interesting.
He has been one of the more interesting things about it so far.
Yeah, and so, like, I was getting close. I'm like, I don't know how much more I'm going to read this book if it's the same. I mean, I really like Cap, and I love Rick Remender, but this kind of stuff is just kind of born it into the ground. But this one is a lot better.
It's finally got going, huh?
Yeah. I think I'm going to start mention notable trade releases and collections. So, this week we got Planetary Omnibus, which we will eventually read for Book Club. By the time you hear this, I will have it in my hands. So if you haven't read Planetary, man, Warren Ellis, so good. And John Cassaday. Then, BRPD Hell on Earth Volume 7, reprinting of Preacher Volume 3. Is out. Indestructible Hulk Volume 1 trade.
Why would they reprint Preacher?
It's out of print.
I did not realize that.
Yeah. Hmm. They're reprinting it again.
That's weird. It really seems strange to have... That's like Sandman being out of print. That's strange.
That's DC for you.
A bunch of whack jobs. Whatever.
Yeah. Wolverine by Mark Silvestri and Larry Hama, Volume 2, which is, they did a big run throughout the 90s. That's the Wolverine I grew up on. And it's pretty good, actually.
I might, here in the Wolverine I grew up on, it's probably the same Wolverine, you know.
Yeah, it's.
We're not so far apart in age.
No. And let's see, Young Avengers Volume 2, I'll be certainly getting that.
I know that was the one that piqued my interest.
Yeah, and X-Factor, Old X-Factor by Peter David, Volume 1, his most recent run, which is still years and years ago. They're, I guess, putting that into print now that it's finally over. That's all I got. I think it's time for Nerd Boy Book Club.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this week. I'm anxious to hear Eric's thoughts on this. We are reading Fantastic Four 570 through 588. It's collected in four trades. There's also a omnibus that's out it's volume one. I'm not sure how much of it contains, but this is basically Hickman's run up to the end of Fantastic Four, culminating in the apparent death of Johnny Storm.
Yeah, I remember when this was out that hearing the rumblings about them killing the Human Torch. I didn't think that it would have the emotional impact that it did. It was, I love the Fantastic Four, but I have never really cared for him as a character. I don't know. It was really, really well done.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, you don't even, like, deaths in comics are kind of, they don't mean much anymore.
Because yes.
Most of the times they come back, and no spoiler at all, he does come back. But
yeah, I knew it was going to happen.
But it's still very well done, and really emotionally impactful.
Yeah, I think probably what made it work was the Spider-Man tie-in and comparing. You know, like the kid mourning his uncle's death.
I made a note to mention that it's really good.
I thought I just really liked that Spider-Man was this reoccurring motif, and Franklin's like, "Yeah, Spider-Man," and
yeah, he loves Spider-Man,
and Johnny's like, "Screw Spider-Man, I'm awesome,
I'm the best."
Yeah, which is hilarious that like he's got this rivalry. It was a really clever device, but it just sort of made that a very poignant ending in the arc. I don't know, it was really, truly good.
Yeah, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but
we can jump around, I think.
Yeah, I'm just going to lay out the basic kind of... Hickman came in with his Fantastic Four, really trying to emphasize, I guess, the things that everyone thinks works with a Fantastic Four, which is family, like strong family ties, and like exploration, adventure, basically. Adventure comics with this family.
Right.
Yeah, and... That there's a lot, and the other thing Hickman is famous for is all these crazy plot threads going simultaneously and then tying up together.
It was almost just too much to even enjoy it towards the beginning, but you know, the end of the arc, it came together.
Yeah, like,
there was just so much going on, and everything is so complicated that it's, for me, it was a little hard to understand what in the hell was going on.
That's what I was going to... That's what I'm... A lot of people... Hickman, a big criticism of him, then and now, is emphasis of plot over character. Where it's just like, he's famous for all these... Like, he has huge whiteboards, and he has, you know, the breakdown of all these plots and where they connect. You know, he plots 4 or 5 years in advance for all these books, and then and it knows exactly where all these stories connect in each issue, and all this kind of crazy stuff. And a lot of people say it's a lot of stuff, too much, and that with all that plot stuff, the characters are overlooked. Frankly, I think this is probably his best character work in any of his Marvel stuff.
Well, he's mostly focusing on Reed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah,
that we're really getting deep into, and he is one of the most interesting characters in the whole Marvel universe. I really love Reed Richards. That, you know, he's got these superpowers, but really his whole power is just being a nerd.
Yeah, being the smartest man.
Yes, and that is I don't know, that's fascinating. It's fun to see super science stories done right.
Yeah, and the plot of all these stories are really emphasizing that fact that his intelligence is what sets him apart, not necessarily the fact he can be stretchy. Like, that's obviously a part of him. He's facing a quandary about how to use his intelligence. Like, he's faced with this. He finds this. Council of Reed Richards, of these Reed Richards from throughout the galaxy or universe, from different dimensions, who are basically solving all the problems, or trying to. To do that, they have had to cut ties with their family, and they also kind of face a lot of ethical quandaries about the lengths they're willing to go. Most famously, like, lobotomizing Dr. Dooms from across different dimensions. And I think that's the way you make Reed Richards the most interesting, is by making him question how he should use his intelligence and the links to which he'll use, you know, the ethical dilemmas that, you know, science can provide sometimes. And you see him stretch against his family, because Franklin, you know, his son, is reactivating his powers, have come back, which are quite, like, you know, quite frankly, devastatingly powerful. And he's a small child, and he could kill the world. That's just one of the many subplots going on. There's also New World, which is like a Earth from the end of time that is trapped in the edge of a black hole. So time, you know, flows differently. There's the Universal Inhumans. There's the New Atlanteans that Sue becomes their queen, and then there's the Nihilus and the Annihilation Wave trying to come back on Earth, and all the, and then not to mention Valeria and Franklin from the future, along with Reed Richards' father, time traveling and trying to kind of manipulate people into doing the right thing so that the future works out right. A lot of threads.
It's almost a little bit of ADD storytelling.
Yeah, but I think it works in the fact that it's in the mold of a lot of adventure comics.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you're one story, you're hitting this, and then, the next story you're hitting this adventure. But it makes it theme like it's episodes of a TV show almost, where you're visiting this, but it's not, you get a sort of an ending, but it's to be continued kind of, and then you're seeing all these little seeds dropped slowly grow together. And it certainly wouldn't work if it wasn't done as neatly as it is in this, where by the end of the arc, you are getting everything coalescing to a certain extent.
Yeah, some things gel, and it's a sensible place to end the arc.
Do you think it was, like, the cheating to bit to have those, like, because some of the stuff is just, like, an info dump, using the basically that, Valeria's learning this stuff on, like, in school. You think that's okay? Like, you get, like, just a plot, like, a little, like, a summary at the end of every issue, almost.
On the data pad thing?
Yeah, those data pads.
I think there's so much crap going on that you kind of need that.
Yeah.
Like, I got to the point where I was just like, what is happening? And I would read the intros and I would read the outros, and it would help a little bit.
Yeah.
There's just so much.
Yeah, it is.
So many threads, so much information, so many characters, so much stuff opening up that it's difficult to keep up with.
Yeah. Do you like the Ben Grimm little story about him becoming human for a week at a time?
The Thing is one of my favorite characters in the whole Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And I could read damn near anything with him in it as long as it's, well written. And I had a blast. It was fun.
The last issue we read, where he's out in the desert with the Hulk and Thor.
Mm-hmm.
God, that scene is like crushing.
Yeah,
where they just let him beat the shit out of them basically because he's so upset. I think it's really interesting that last issue, the artist is a lot different than the art in most of this.
It was very different. I'm not exactly sure what the decision of that was, other than, they needed someone else to finish the arc out, or, for time constraints, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's just weird because, there's different artists throughout this. They have a few guys, they have like two or three guys, but then this one is a distinctive stylistic change.
Yeah.
It really works really well, though. I still like it.
Let me ask you something that occurred to me while you were discussing. Specifically when you said the word lobotomizing.
Yeah.
Because that made me think of Identity Crisis.
Yeah.
How about you talk about sort of your thoughts? Because this is... A lot of people criticize sort of this kind of story as being too serious for comics. Like they criticize the Illuminati.
Mm-hmm.
As being too serious for comics, too gritty. But this is a story where, hundreds of billions of lives are on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think about Identity Crisis. Can you talk about sort of your thoughts, why this kind of shift to a more serious comic story works for you versus why Identity Crisis didn't?
I think because it's respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And one, Reed Richards, the one we know, it's
you're comparing apples to oranges because one is badly written.
Yeah.
At least to an extent.
Yeah.
And this one, even from the get-go, you can feel like the quality in the writing.
Yeah. And A, Reed Richards and most of the characters in this feel true, authentic. Mm-hmm. You don't see any people going, oh, Superman didn't hear it. You know, he chooses not to hear things like that.
Right.
Which is doesn't ring true to me as his character. Reed Richards, one, he's confronted with all these ethical problems with that this Council of Reeds are doing. And in the end of the day, he walks away from it. You see, and then I was just actually flipping through that last issue we read, and there's near the end, there's this picture of a disheveled Reed Richards, obviously looking troubled. He's, you know, his facial hair is grown out. He hasn't shaved. He's looking at the summary of all these threats. And it says, invasion from the negative zone, high. Invasion from universal inhumans, high. Celestial invasion, medium. Franklin, his son, power set problem, high. And you can, like, Galactus, destruction of Earth, high. Reformation of the council. This thing he doesn't want to do. He doesn't want to go back to this council because he is troubled by the links that they've gone to erase all these problems. I mean, they're doing good, but at the same time, how far are you willing to go? And he's clearly troubled by this dilemma. And I think it's not an easy thing. It doesn't happen off panel. We're watching him. We're walking these steps with him as we see the good this council is doing, where they're feeding billions of people by having entire worlds of just like just grow food. Then we also walk with him as we see the ethical quandaries this council undertakes by every time there's a doom comes around is a problem, they just capture him and put a helmet on him that makes him totally subservient. And then, you know, we see we're with Reed as he's encountering these things. And we see the trouble he's having, multiple threats, like any of them could, you know, destroy Earth or seriously hurt the people he cares about. And he's struggling with it. It's not easy. And you see that in New Avengers as well. We see them, you know, there's all these characters are struggling with these decisions. It's never easy. And I think that's the crux of it to me. In Identity Crisis, half that stuff happens off page. It seems more like gimmicky than anything. This seems like it's clearly trying to show the problems, the ethical problems that he could encounter. Like, how far are you willing to go to save billions of lives? And that's the same thing in New Avengers. It's the same kind of things. And I think as long as it's not easy, it shouldn't be easy. They're clearly struggling. And I think that's important. Doom is in the... We were talking about Doom before we decided to read this a little bit. You won't get a lot of Doom in this part.
No.
But we will. He is... It plays a major role in the following portions of this story. For the criticism of Jonathan Hickman is not really doing character well, this is really touching at certain points. You've already mentioned, you know, the Spider-Man and Franklin scene. You know, they both lost their uncle. Their uncle. Spider-Man's not finished with this. He becomes the replacement member when they relaunch the book almost right away as FF. Do you think that the overall plot threads are a little too much?
It was terribly difficult to follow at the beginning. And
you think it's worth the investment, I should say?
Huh?
You think it's worth the investment of, you know, trying to...
More so, I mean, it's... Initially, it made me think a lot of Tom Strong. It's one of my favorite comics. I think Alan Moore is more successful in that he can bring together a lot of seemingly unrelated adventure story threads in the same way. And the story is told, I think, a little more clearly. It's still a good, solid read, but it's hard not to compare it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're very similar.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly the same. Like, I keep expecting to see Tesla Strong. You know?
Well, I mean, I know that's part of the reason I suggested it, because I know you love Tom Strong, and this is...
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar. Families and adventure comics and...
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Super science and
super science.
All that jazz. It's it was a blast to read this. You know, it's my preferred way, I think, to experience the Marvel Universe is a story more like this, with characters more like this.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't even know if I'd call it trying too hard, but he definitely more hit his stride more towards the middle. He kind of turned a corner there. Maybe he wasn't, like, feeling like he had to get so much out, you know, that he had to explain all these concepts. And by the end, we understood them pretty well.
Yeah.
And we're able to watch them come together in a way that's much more enjoyable. The whole second half, I'm not even sure, maybe the last 8 to 10 books,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even more than that, I don't know. Just a lot more readable.
Yeah.
You know, and the concepts and things that I didn't understand because I didn't know all the characters, or there was some subtlety that was lost on me. Everything more made sense. I knew what was happening, and I was interested in it. It had the right punch.
Yeah. A lot of the things had become more, I don't know, more understandable near the end. You know, the new world thing, you know, this weird future Earth that, a lot of that stuff happened before he started. Some of that stuff, like a lot of this stuff existed before, and he just kind of drew it into his story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of it's weird ideas and stuff. And him trying to connect the dots is a lot of that struggle early on, and trying to mm-hmm. get all this exposition out.
Yes.
People, because you have to get to understand, you know, the weird universal in humans, like, trying to understand the concept of that, plus the concept of all these undersea creatures that have lived there for a long time, plus this, all the, you know, the Moloids and the Mole Man subplot and all that. You know, it's a lot of heavy science fiction stuff
mm-hmm.
that can be difficult to get out in a comic book, especially trying to get them all out together, you know, throughout the series. And I agree with you. It does. I don't know if it's necessary to make it so, you know, complicated in the beginning, laying groundwork and all that.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's... I understand why it's slower, because he's trying to get all this stuff out there. I'm not sure if it was possible to do it in a more clean way and still without just having pages and pages of text. It certainly... I think the better assessment is that it's worth... You know, getting it's like reminded me a little bit of Anthem,
mm-hmm.
where you
yes, that there's so much just nuance and backstory and everything that you need. That's just sort of a preamble
to the actual story itself.
Exactly,
and that's Anthem. Like the first 200 pages, I'm like, oh, this is tough, but you stick with it, and it's mm-hmm. worth the payoff. It's worth so that you feel more in it's more immersed in the story at the end, after you've gotten through that.
I think my favorite are the Moloid kids.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
They're hilarious.
They play a even bigger part in the second half, or second two-thirds even. I don't know how to cut it into pieces, but...
That's exciting.
There's probably another 20, 30 issues left in this Hickman's run. It gets better, honestly.
It's a pretty strong start.
Yeah, and this whole first part is really the groundwork for what is developing later on as they encounter all those threats. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out, and I'll post it on this episode. I want to make sure it's at a logical, you know, a logical point.
Pick the next couple of arcs, and
yeah, exactly.
Post it in the show notes.
Exactly. Other than that, it's Fantastic Four 570 through 588. It's available in 4 trades. You can also buy it digitally, of course, which is probably the way to go, honestly. And then we're going to continue on with the next week with the relaunch, which is just FF, which sees Spider-Man join the team. And a lot of these plot threads developing even further. And that's it for Nerd Boy Book Club this week.
Magnificent.
We are going to bring back an older segment. We haven't done one in a while. It is time, I think.
It is long time reckoning.
Yeah. For time for a random character generator. Haven't said those words in a while.
It is true. I thought you forgot how to say them.
Well, I looked at our old show notes and I went, oh yeah, that.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, I threw out this idea, and I don't know how it's going to work, but we'll see how it goes. And the base idea for this character is a friend-zoned Conan the Barbarian. I had this image in my head of this guy with a fedora wearing a My Little Pony t-shirt with really bad facial hair, like sitting on like that giant throne that Conan would always, you know, that image you get of Arnold Schwarzenegger on that throne. And right. I just thought of, like, instead of seeing that, you'd see, like, you know, a overweight guy, brony guy with like a fedora.
And now apparently complaining about how all these women won't just fuck him.
Yeah, how dare they?
You didn't even say it as friend zoned before. That's an interesting addition.
You think of Conan and he's like this conqueror.
Yes, that's just like, woman, come here.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was interesting, like, to play off that, yes, that friend zoned thing. The MRA, male right activist asshole douchebag guy.
I don't think that the friend zone, they're sort of,
they're not necessarily,
they're different avenues of assholery.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, that general idea, like, I don't know, like, it's, there's like a My Little Pony documentary on Netflix right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw on Tumblr, one of the artists I follow, or someone reblogged an artist who had, was watching it and drawing every fedora worn by all the people interviewed. And there was like 13 of them. 13 individual people all wearing fedoras.
That is special.
It is.
I mean, is it a real fedora? Because most people,
it's not. Who knows? Yeah.
It's,
I mean,
just a hat.
It's, yeah. It's a fedora in quotations.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to, you know, that famous Conan quote, like, Conan, what is good in life? And I was trying to think of what, like,
what does he say? Like,
to crush your enemies and see, yeah, them driven before you, to hear the lamentations of other women.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what this the neckbeard fedora guy would say.
Well, let's set the scene a little bit.
Okay.
In what aspect is he based off of Conan the Barbarian? Is he in the Conan world? Is he supposed to have Conan's personality, except he's just, I don't know. He's like how does this work? This is how I'm trying to piece this together.
I don't know. That's a quandary I came to. I was just like, we'll have to just figure that out.
There's no time like the present.
Exactly. I'm saying it has to be in Conan's world, yes, to a certain extent.
Is it? Is it the modern day version of Conan's world? Or
I don't know.
Is it just sort of? Is it like the ironic hipster version of Conan's world?
I think that. Okay. I think that's it. I have that image of him sitting on that throne,
mm-hmm,
and people won't sit on thrones anymore. not in real life.
People, so, you know, he was sitting on that throne before it was cool.
That's very true.
Yes.
Is it okay? That's true.
Well, let's continue to define who this character is.
Okay.
Like, what is he doing? Is he like Conan, that he's just sort of like a traveling the countryside and getting into adventures and falling into trouble and trying to, you know, create a kingdom?
I think so. Yeah.
So
I think, except for the fact that he doesn't understand why women aren't having sex with him.
I do like the idea of he's like he like rescues like some girl, and he's like just completely repellent to her, just acts like such a shithead, and is like really like surprised when she's not like she doesn't like fall into his arms. I mean, not that Conan the Barbarian isn't a complete shithead of his own, but
no,
I don't know. Where's that line at of just being like this, you know, like male decisiveness and just like, ugh, you know, this He-Man and this other guy is just like, well, you know, I guess, you know, you should be my girlfriend. He probably doesn't even like save these women. You know, it's not. He just like probably just pesters them, and thinks he's saving them.
They're with like a Conan type.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. That's exactly right.
And he's like trying to save them from this. And she's like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
He probably just like Conan, he has like a team of like hangers on of yeah. different like who are I don't even know if they're probably similar,
mm-hmm.
but not they're like the betas if you want to even use that awful
yeah we're not gonna yes
the,
you, can, you can say there he's the alpha nerd.
I hate all that stupid that it's all that what is it pick up advice and all that, using that be alpha and all that stupid shit. But yeah, like they probably like they think that she's imprisoned or something in this castle or by a guy who's like a Conan,
mm-hmm.
like a big muscly mm-hmm. conqueror guy. And then like they get in, sneak in or something, and she's like, "No, I'm good." And he's like, "Come on, I'm rescuing you. Look how nice I'm being."
It should just start out with, like, he's, like, bringing her takeout or something stupid like that.
Probably. Like, he probably works in the castle.
Yeah.
He works in the castle, and he's, like, he looks at her from afar.
I like the idea that he's, like, an adventurer bike messenger boy.
Yes.
That he thinks
he's going on these epic adventures.
Yeah, but he's delivering a poo-poo platter.
And he sees her, you know, in his, you know, he has very small interactions with her that he mm-hmm. thinks are more grandiose than they actually are.
Oh, this is magical already.
Like, and you know, she'll say, you know, he'll bring her food. And she'll say, thank you. And he's like, oh, she loves me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, you know, he decides to, he builds up this idea in his head that she hates. She sees her and the Conan lookalike argue once, and he suddenly has this idea. Oh, she needs me to rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then he breaks in, and she, you know, refuses. She's like, "What are you doing?" It's like, "I'm rescuing you. I'm fine. I like him. We're good. I'm in a good spot." And I think this rage and frustration sends him off into an actual adventure. But he just keeps doing the same thing. Like, he decides, like, to call together all his friends, and they actually go out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and try and rescue another woman to make this, the one he tried to rescue, jealous or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the idea. And there should be, like, a woman in it, like, a girl in his party that clearly likes him.
Ooh. Man, you're batting 1,000.
Clearly likes him and is like perfectly good person.
Yeah.
Probably too good for him, honestly.
Yeah, he sounds like kind of a shitbag, doesn't he?
Yeah, she likes him and she's probably too good of a person. Like, he doesn't deserve her. Mm. And he's oblivious to it. And it probably treats her like, you know, like another guy,
mm-hmm.
another one of their friends, another one of the gang.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have to have some kind of delineation in their roles.
In my mind, she looks like, what is her name? America. She plays Ugly Betty. She looks like Ugly Betty in Red Sonja garb.
Yeah, probably. I think that's good.
That's exactly what she looks like to me.
Someone who's clearly attractive and nice, but he just has like such a hard on for this damsel in distress shit that he can't. He just looks right past her.
Right.
And she, for some reason, is obsessed. Probably self-esteem issues or something.
She just has a thing for fedoras.
Yeah, that must be it.
She's basically sort of started following him around because she's got a crush on him.
Right, exactly. And she's overt.
Mm-hmm.
I think that she has to be overt about it. And he is just completely shitty about it.
Right.
And I think at this point they go out and what do you think the adventure they go on, the first adventure?
What their adventure is?
Yeah, after the first little setup.
Well, I think there needs to be giant monsters and a wizard.
Okay.
Or some sort of massive army of like warforged D&D style robots. So I think
that's a pretty good idea.
I
like the robot thing.
You do? You like so there's a wizard with a giant army of warforged robots.
And I think they're scoping this out and they're like, "We'll take them down and then she'll want me."
Oh my god. Do you know who Mystery is?
No.
Mystery is one of those he's like famous for being like scumbag pickup artist. Like he looks like Chris Angel. Like he fucking dresses like a magician. That's who this villain is.
That's good. I like that.
Like he wears like eyeliner and a fuzzy hat.
Oh, that's perfect. And I think they're scoping this army out and they see this guy and there's probably like a chick with him.
Yes.
And he like turns like he's going to defeat this army and impress this chick. Not even to get her, but to just use her to make the other one jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finds out that it's just the girlfriend of the wizard. And she doesn't want to be rescued either.
Yeah. And he's like, "Hey man, why don't you break all my stuff? Warforged are really, really expensive."
Yeah. Like, "Why'd you mess with me, man? I wasn't doing anything with my army of robots."
He calls him Brosif. Why are you trucking with me, Brosif? I say that. How often do you hear me saying bro? Fucking all the time.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, I can't help myself.
Yeah. You don't say it the same way they do, though.
Ah. What's the difference?
Eric.
Hi.
Eric.
Huh?
You gay?
That's a blast from the past.
I had to throw that one out there.
You did. Do we have to tell that story now?
I guess to make it may have any sense at all.
I guess so. Correct me if you remember any of this any different. It's been a long time since I've even thought about this.
I don't remember.
But this was
anything
this
except
was,
for that.
This was shortly
meat,
under
some meathead guy, right?
It was. It was shortly under a year ago. I was leaving a karaoke bar at like 1 in the morning, and there had been some dude, he carried himself really well, and he sang a song, and he was awesome, and I wanted to say, you know, "Hey, you're a cool guy," and I go up to him, and, you know, it was, like, I kind of put my foot in my mouth a little bit, I was a little bit drunk, but I'm like, "Oh, yeah, you seem like a cool guy, and you sang this song, and you seem pretty awesome." And he's like, "Yep, nothing but cornbread and butter beans." That is literally what he said back to me. But I don't know why he had this giant meathead buddy with him who, like, sort of puffed out his chest and looked at me and said, "Are you gay?" And sensing that the conversation was becoming tense, his two friends just walked off. The end.
No,
anyway,
but I think you have to mention the fact that you and that was the thing. I think you said
what
you
was
just
that?
Randomly, you and who was it? Your brother or was it somebody
else?
It
was all of us. It was MegaCon a year ago.
Yeah, like, but you like for some the rest of the weekend. It was
just like
randomly.
That was just the thing. Whenever there was like air in the conversation or there was like a tense pause, You just shout, "Are you gay?"
Yeah.
Because that's how you make things better.
Yeah, that's a normal human conversation.
Yes, that is.
Yeah.
So, congratulations, random idiot.
What's our name? We just need to name this guy. He needs a name. He has to have the same naming like construct as Conan the Barbarian. Something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conan the Bike Messenger is a little too. It doesn't quite work, but
it can be. Let me think.
I mean, like what is an appropriately hipstery name? Like what part do we, you know, what part of this remains the same? What part do we change? Because I don't think Friend Zone Conan the Barbarian's a good name.
No, it's not. That's just the idea's name. Coming to the name Sheldon, but that's...
I like Sheldon the Barbarian.
He's not a barbarian. I mean, that name is from that stupid, awful show.
What show is that? Oh, no, what's wrong with that? We do not need to speak its name.
Okay. So Sheldon, it shouldn't be a barbarian, it should be...
I like Sheldon the Barbarian, I think that's funny.
Sheldon the Barbarian?
I think that's funny as hell.
Just make it that simple?
Yeah, what's wrong with that? That works well for me.
Okay.
And I think Sheldon is a... To me, that works with this character that we've built.
Yeah, I think so.
He's kind of an ineffectual, like a kind of a weenie. Sheldon is kind of a weenie's name. Apologies to all Sheldons that may or may not be listening.
I'm sure all the Sheldons listening are awesome and handsome and successful.
I hope so.
Because if you're listening to this podcast, that's what you are.
Clearly.
Yeah.
But Sheldons... That's why I listen to every episode twice.
Exactly. All those other Sheldons. Weenies.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. Especially in this Sheldon.
Mm-hmm.
Utmost.
Oh, do you know what's an even worse name?
What?
Rusty.
Rusty?
Rusty.
Is his real name actual Russell, but he goes by Rusty?
I don't know why anyone would choose to do that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's clearly... Russell is better, but he goes by Rusty.
Yeah. Rusty.
Or it could be Sheldon Russell the Barbarian, and he just is, in quotations, Rusty.
Hmm.
Like, Russell is his middle name... And he doesn't like Sheldon, so he goes by Rusty, which is even worse.
It's ironic.
Yes.
I think as far as names go,
Sheldon Russell
makes a lot of sense. But I like Sheldon the Barbarian.
Sheldon the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Well, his name is Sheldon Russell, but then he goes, "I'm Sheldon the Barbarian."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, except totally not. I think he beats the Warforged just by like hacking.
Well, he's just to be in the world that he's in, he's got to have some fighting skill, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a sword. He's got an S word.
Yeah, he has to have a sword. But a replica sword from like a
he's like the replica of like the Witch King sword from the Lord of the Rings.
Yes. It's like a replica sword. Like I paid big money for this. I practice every day.
Hmm.
Get all the ladies. See my sword skills.
Yep.
SS sword skills.
Yep. Girls only want to date guys with great skills.
Yep. Sword skills. And no social skills.
Mm-hmm. Because who likes social skills?
Yeah.
Not me.
I think that's good. That's the first... We got a first adventure in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can revisit this character. I think this is almost unlimited depth that we can just plumb.
Yes, of just making fun of people that we're angry with. I love this sort of mean spirit. This is perfect.
Yeah. I have no qualms. I mean, those people are wrong.
Well, I think mystery and that... Mystery and nice guy syndrome are two things that I think need to be made fun of.
Yeah, precisely.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're doing God's work here.
Exactly. Exactly. That was Random Character Generator. I'm very happy that we revisited that.
I know.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
magnificent. This is a good return. This has been my favorite one since Robot Fighter in Prime.
That was very good.
That was an exciting one.
Yeah, I think that brings us to a close.
Closing up shop, guys,
for the week. We'll be back next week.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. If you're nice.
If you are. Yeah, but don't be a nice guy.
Don't be a nice guy. Just be nice. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. Just clear difference.
Just be a good dude.
Just be a good person.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's about it.
Yeah. This was episode 37. We got the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can get us on the Twitter at HBC Hour. You can find us on Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can like us there. We are facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Like us. You can see all this stuff as it pops up on your feed. Don't have to go search it down. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. Please subscribe. If you are you use iTunes, leave us reviews, rate us, subscribe. It really helps us out. We appreciate it. For me, you can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. It's MixmasterCereal. I'm on Tumblr, the same name. Eric, where can they find you and your things online?
You can find my things. You can go to freewillunlimited.com and see my portfolio. And you can go to ericzgoodnight.com and see a collection of most of the things I do online. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R, Bad Example.
So, folks, until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.
I'm a girl.